people are like, wow, there's so much science in ice cream. Ice cream itself is one of the most complex foods known to humankind. It's a solid, a liquid, and a gas all at once. And it's one of the only foods that we eat in the state at which it was created, in exact frozen state at which it was created. Think about what you eat frozen. Most of what's in your freezer, you heat up.
Hey, everybody. I'm Julie, and welcome to Women with Cool Jobs. Each episode will feature women with unique, trailblazing, and innovative careers. We'll talk about how she got here, what life is like now, and actionable steps that you can take to go on a similar path or one that's all your own. This podcast is about empowering you. It's about empowering you to dream big and to be inspired. You'll hear from incredible women in a wide variety of fields, and hopefully some that you've never heard of before. Women who build robots and roadways, firefighters, C-suite professionals surrounded by men, social media mavens, entrepreneurs, and more. I'm so glad we get to go on this journey together. Hello, everybody. This is Julie Berman, and welcome to another episode of Women with Cool Jobs. So today I have such a fun episode for you, and I feel like this is every 6 and 7 year old's dream job. I think it definitely would have been up there amongst mine, along with like being a princess. And so I am speaking with Dr. Maya Warren today. She is an ice cream scientist. And what the cool thing is about this conversation and cool, I'm putting that in like air quotes, cool. What the cool thing about this conversation is that she is a food scientist and her background is actually in chemistry. And so she uses chemistry all the time to be able to do this job. In this conversation, you'll hear her talk about like some key components of what it takes to create a really great ice cream. And she also uses math in her job. And this really blew my mind because I just had never thought of this idea of food scientist, which is what she is. She's a specific type of food scientist who helps create ice cream. And I had never thought about, like, if you go into your grocery store or you go into your local Trader Joe's, all of the things that, especially the ones that are like packaged, those were often touched or created by a food scientist, meaning that they were using this science and math to help perfect the delicious thing that you are eating up. So for example, she was talking about how everything from Skittles to chips to things in the frozen food aisle, like the meals that you warm up, those all had food scientists involved in helping to create them and helping to ensure that, you know, if you buy your ice cream or you buy your frozen meal, that when you go to warm it up, that it still tastes delicious, you know, a month or something later. And, or when you buy those that bag of Skittles, that when you start chewing it, that it has the right flavor to it in a consistent fashion. So I just loved this episode because, of course, who doesn't want to talk about ice cream? But beyond that, when you go deeper, we get into all this really interesting content about how she's using these STEM skills to help, which it stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, how she uses these skills to then have this cool job where she's creating ice cream. And she talks about like all the nuances of not only creating the ice cream itself and like thinking about, okay, well, should it be full fat or less fat? How many people want, you know, different elements in it? And does it need to be kosher or halal or, you know, meet other certain requirements? So in addition to that, she also has this background that really lends itself to like the business part of it and also the manufacturing side of it, which is something that I never thought about. Like, you know, how specifically do you package the ice cream so that you know it's going to last for a few months in someone's freezer after they purchase it from the store? Or if you're purchasing it from a scoop shop, like how does that work and how do things need to change? So it was just such an interesting in-depth conversation. It was, of course, you know, so much fun. I feel like I learned so much and I had such a great time. So I hope that you really love this episode with Dr. Maya. She has such a cool job. And I feel like this is one of those episodes that I could have gone on for like a long time to learn all the nuances of how people create ice cream. And I know that I've actually since had ice cream from a scoop shop and I totally think about it differently. So I'm curious if you will too. And so please, please, if you love this episode, please make sure you share it with at least one other person who maybe they love ice cream or maybe they're really amazing at like chemistry and other sciences. And this might be a really good field for them to think about and to consider for the future. Or maybe this is even something that you want to consider for the future. So please make sure you at least share it with one person. That is how we continue to let people know about all the incredible women who exist in the world and their very cool jobs. So take care and thank you for listening. All right. So hello and welcome to Women with Cool Jobs. I'm so excited to be here with Dr. Maya Warren, who has maybe one of my favorite jobs. Like it just sounds like the dream job of a child, any child in the whole world. And also my husband, it might be his dream job too, because he loves ice cream. So you are an ice cream scientist who travels the world developing and creating ice cream and other frozen aerated desserts. So welcome to Women with Cool Jobs. Your job definitely fits.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. Yes, I believe that it's one of the coolest and sweetest jobs. Yes, the pun was intended ever to exist. But no, thank you for having me. I absolutely love, love, love ice cream and the science of it and sharing my passion with others. So hopefully people will get a little inspired to maybe look into the world of food science and also kind of what you can do with becoming an ice cream scientist.
I love that. So I would love for you to like explain in your own way, like, how do you describe your job? Like, what is an ice cream scientist? What do you do?
So as an ice cream scientist, I create new formulas for ice cream products and not just ice cream. When I say ice cream, I'm really using a generic kind of term, I guess, but I'm really talking about all of its close cousins as well. And all of ice cream's close cousins are like gelato, sorbet, frozen yogurt, sherbet, custard. All of those fit into the close cousin with ice cream. And so as an ice cream scientist, I create, develop new flavors, new formulations for the ice cream industry. And so that could be anything from doing market research to understand what kind of new trends are out there flavor-wise, texture-wise, and then be able to create those products on a small scale for R&D purposes and then on a very large mass production scale. I'm talking about possibly making within a month's worth of time over 500,000 units of ice cream for companies. And so it seems like a lot because it is. And being able to then help them make sure that the product holds up properly, make sure the product tastes properly, you know, over the period of a shelf life. And ice cream shelf life wise, you know, some ice creams we put almost up to 2 year shelf life on ice cream. Wow. And so making sure that the product stays the quality that you desire from start to finish of that shelf life and using those proper ingredients to make sure that happens, and then be able to help a company scale that product and get that product into distribution. And so I do everything from creating the product, sort of the concept, the idea, all the way to creating that flavor and finding new flavors that are out there across the globe and being able to make sure that when I'm creating it, that when the consumer's eating it, they're getting the depth and the intricacies of what I desired during that creation process. And so as a scientist, it's a lot of math, a lot of science, of course, involved in creating new flavors and developing new products. And I will sit here today and tell you it's one of the best joys of my life, being able to create new flavors and for people to then be able to eat what I create.
Yeah, that just sounds so cool. And I think one of the most interesting things that I was really intrigued by for your job was just that idea of how much science like is actually involved. I mean, I guess I had just never thought about it because I just eat the ice cream and I'm like, oh, this is really joyous and I'm happy about that. Like I didn't take it anywhere else. And so I love that idea, you know, and just finding out more about like what you do and the details that it actually does involve quite a lot of science. I mean, like, you know, I say doctor, you're a doctor, like, and I'm so curious, like, how did you end up in this field? And then like, I want to learn more as we go along about the science behind it. So let's go back to like you as a younger person, like, can you explain how did you even get involved in this field? Cause it's just so rad. Like, I mean, yeah, I feel like it's every kid's dream job, but then you don't think about like, I could actually do this.
I could become this.
Yeah.
So yeah. So how did I become an ice cream scientist? That's a question for days. but I will start before I even knew an ice cream scientist existed. When I was 6 years old, I got sort of the ice cream version of an Easy Bake Oven. I had an Easy Bake Oven already, and I used to love, you know, looking at the little light bulb, kind of heat up my concoctions, whatever I was making in that little plastic unit, and then be able to transfer that into the ice cream world where I would, you know, rip open these packets of, I'm assuming, sugar and some dairy products, maybe some stabilizers. I don't actually know what was in it, and maybe some flavoring. And I would pour milk or water or cream. I don't know, whatever they told me to pour in there. And I would get my rock salt and ice, making a brine solution, which at that time at six, I had no clue what I was doing, but I would follow the directions. And then I would, you know, eventually start churning my own ice cream. And it was absolutely disgusting. It was not good, but I was so intrigued at the fact that I made my own ice cream. And I was like, wow, how cool and how literally rad is this? And so fast forward that all the way to being a senior in college, where I was already a chemistry major at Carleton College. I knew that I wanted to do chemistry. And I thought I was going to become a high school chem teacher. Then I thought I was going to become a sports medicine doctor because I was already an athlete in college and I was doing medicine courses basically anyway, pre-med courses anyway. But then I found food science via the Food Network. I was watching Unwrapped on the Food Network, and there's a particular episode where they go in into a flavor chemistry lab and they show how to make soda taste like different parts of the traditional Thanksgiving meal. So they were making like green bean casserole flavored soda, cranberry sauce flavored soda, like mashed potatoes and gravy flavored soda. And if you're like me, you're like, oh, like that does not sound good at all. How incredibly intriguing is this? And so I was like, wow, I could become a food scientist or I could become a flavor chemist because that's what I basically saw on TV. And so fast forward years later, or not actually, maybe a few months later, I figured out how to become a food scientist. Wow. And during my time of doing that, I asked myself, what food do you love so much that you never will feel like you're working a day in your life? And I go rewind all the way back to that bright-eyed, bushy-tailed little six-year-old girl ripping open that package and churning her own ice cream for the very first time. And I realized how much I absolutely love ice cream. And so I said, I'm going to do what I love and love what I do for the rest of my life. And so I set out to get my PhD from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and specialize in the microstructure, sensorial, and behavioral properties of frozen aerated desserts. And to this day, I love it more and more every day. It's one of those degrees that keeps on giving over the years. And so I feel very honored and special to have been able to find my ice cream, but also for ice cream to have been able to find me. I feel like we're two peas in a pod.
I love that. That's such an amazing story. And it's just so interesting too that like you saw that episode and you're like, what is this about? Because I mean, that sounds a little crazy. Like, I agree that I don't know that I would want to try those flavors, but the idea that you can even attempt to make them in the first place is mind blowing. Mm-hmm. So
yes, yeah, it's very intriguing.
Yeah. I love that. And like, as far as now kind of getting into the details of what you do. So as an ice cream scientist, like I know you come in and you're more like a consultant and you work with different companies to help them figure out like, maybe a specific new product or maybe revamp a product. Can you kind of walk us through like some of the things that you've done or that you're working on, if whatever you can share? And because I'd love to get like an overview overview of what kinds of things you work on in this role. And then also maybe a little bit later, we can talk about like kind of the more details of it. Like, how do you figure out how to make a special ice cream for a company? Like, what's involved in that?
Yeah. So a lot of what I do is creating new ice cream products, so the bases. So not all ice cream is made equally. So ice cream, when you look at it at its core, is a balanced chemical equation, basically. And when I say chemical, I don't mean like, oh my God, like it's a chemical, like I can't eat it. I'm saying it's a balanced equation in the chemistry realm. And so you've got liquids and you've got solids, and you need those liquids and solids to balance out so that the product, the liquid ice cream mix, freezes properly into your finished ice cream product. And so you don't want too much water, i.e. too much moisture. It could become overly icy, or the ice crystals could become too large, or it just won't freeze at the right temperature. Or you don't want too little water or too little moisture in your product, because then you could end up with a product that doesn't freeze properly. It ends up becoming really sticky in texture. So neither one of those are good things in the ice cream world. So as a scientist, I work to find that really fine line under the parameters under which a company is asking me to create. And so whether that's ice cream, or whether that's sorbet, or frozen yogurt, or custard, or sherbet, or you know, anything in that realm, I find that sweet spot of where that balance is. And then that becomes my blank canvas. And then I become basically almost like an artist and a scientist in the kitchen or in the lab, where I kind of throw anything and everything at it. And so I've created bases that are low fat or non-fat or high protein, for instance. And so those are things that then kind of can mess up the equation, because you're like, I created this equation that works. It has roughly 3 or 4% protein, which is very common in the ice cream industry. But now, you know, someone wants me to have 15% protein, and you're like, okay, I've got my total solids is kind of a little skewed now. So how do I balance that? Oh, and then I've got a company that wants me to make a product with no added sugar. So that means we've got lactose coming in from the milk, which is a natural sugar occurring in milk, but then we don't want to add any other sugar. And sugar is key in ice cream because it helps lower the point at which it freezes. So now we use sugar alcohols or sugar alternatives. And so I work on different projects that always focus on that balanced equation, and then be able to use that balanced equation, i.e. my liquid mix, as a blank canvas to throw all different kind of flavors at it. So if we want to make a cornbread flavored ice cream, or if we want to make cookie dough, if we want to make tortilla chip flavored ice cream, or curry flavored, I mean, you name it, you can make it, because it's a blank canvas. It absorbs whatever you throw at it. And that's the beauty of ice cream. And so everything's not good to me. Maybe it's good to other people, but I like to say everything that I make is not delicious to me. But I like to say that I know how to create delicious products, regardless if it's delicious to me or not. But some things just don't belong in ice cream. Like, for instance, ketchup ice cream. I just don't think that works. I've had it. I've tasted it. I just don't think it should happen again. That's the beauty of ice cream. I know, right? That's the beauty of ice cream, is that you can do anything and everything with it. And so within my job, I look at how to create those beautiful products that the consumer will enjoy. And consumers are different depending upon where you are in the US as well as where you are in the world. Mm. And so do you want that traditional cookies and cream or cookie dough or that tried and true vanilla? Or do you kind of want to flip it on its head a little bit and try something unique and different and new that might honestly just kind of be a marketing thing, but it really gets people in the door, or, you know, to open that freezer door. And so I kind of do everything from start to finish, from conceptualizing an idea all the way to doing the mass production of that product. And the science is ingrained in all of it throughout the way.
Wow. That's fascinating. And thank you for that amazing overview. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, who are the people in the teams that you work with? Because it sounds like you've worked with everyone from like small, you know, smaller companies to like huge, huge corporations. So who are the people that you work with? Because I'm imagining like some of those things you mentioned, the science, but then also the actual creation, like the ideation part, like those are all very different roles. Mm-hmm. So how does that part work, or those parts, I should say?
Yes. So I work with the business teams, the marketing teams, the sales teams. I kind of work with everyone, the logistics team, especially too, because they've got to move the product that I make. We got to make sure it moves properly. But I work with everyone, especially like in the beginning with like the marketing type strategy of, all right, we want to create this type of flavor, or we want to create this type of product because this is on trend, or we want to kind of break the ceiling a little bit or get whatever with this new flavor or this new product. And so there's a lot of working with the marketing team to make sure that product is created and they can market it properly. Mm. So that's a big thing. Then working with the sales teams, they understand what they're trying to sell or what they're trying to make sure they can move forward with. But I also work with CEOs, the people that started their own companies, and they may be startups that have this new idea, and they may be doing a lot of the groundwork to be able to create the product. So I help them with their nutritional labels. I help them with their formulas. And some people that I work with, I send them formulas and they work it themselves because they want to learn. They want to know what they're doing. But I work with kind of the overarching team because everyone touches the product. And yeah. So because I create the product, everyone needs to understand what's being created and how to utilize it. Hey, we've got a product that the shelf life might be a little longer, or it might be a little shorter. They need to know that. And I also work with vendors to be able to pull in new flavors, new ingredients, that can maybe bring in new textures or new mouthfeels or anything like that in the industry. So I kind of work with anyone and everything, especially even the production teams. Mm-hmm. So I don't own my own production facility, but I work with co-packers around the globe. And so those co-packers are key as well. And so I work hand in hand with them to make sure that the packaging arrives on time, to make sure that the product, when it goes into the cup, is the right product, is the right ratio of vanilla ice cream to caramel and to cookie dough pieces. All of that goes into play because you don't want a product that your goal was maybe 7% cookie dough and you've got now 14% cookie dough inside of it. Mm. That throws everything off. That throws off your yield. That throws off your cost, your margins in terms of how much the product actually costs. Because you've got that much more cookie dough in there now, your product is going to increase in cost more than you thought it would. And you don't have enough cookie dough to last you the whole run anymore. So I work with, basically kind of everyone. But the most fun part of what I do is being able to, of course, taste the product and make sure that it tastes good. It's all about the market research sometimes.
Yes. we're definitely going to get to that, yes, because I do key. Have that's, questions. That's yes.
There's a lot of taste testing for sure. And that is key. That's a key component of what I do. But no, all jokes aside, the team has to understand what they're trying to market or sell or what they're trying to distribute. And so making sure they understand they can also, be proponents of the product as well.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating. Just even from the idea of like, if you include too much of this or not enough of that, right? How it can affect costs or everything else that goes into it.
Can throw everything off. Can throw everything off. And so that whole balanced equation that I spoke about earlier is really key when it comes to my job. And people are like, wow, there's so much science in ice cream. Ice cream itself is one of the most complex foods known to humankind. It's a solid, a liquid, and a gas all at once.
Wow.
And it's one of the only foods that we eat in the state at which it was created, in exact frozen state at which it was created. Hmm. Think about what you eat frozen. Most of what's in your freezer, you heat up.
Right. Yeah.
Not That's ice cream. True. And not its close cousins. Because once you heat that up, it melts and it's never going to be the same again.
Right? And then I got some sad children, right?
Yes.
I love that. Okay. So I have to ask this because we mentioned it a little bit, but tell us about the taste testing part, because I feel like everybody listening is me like, tell us more because we want to know. So how does that work? And like how, I almost feel like this is maybe a terrible comparison, you can tell me if it is, but like I think of like a sommelier, and like a sommelier just has all these heightened gifts for understanding the nuances of wine. So I feel like perhaps you're a sommelier of ice cream, whatever that word may be.
Yes, I love the comparison.
Oh, good. I'm glad. So how do you like when you're actually tasting ice cream? Obviously, we want it to taste good, but I'm imagining that you are looking for much more than just that it tastes good. So how are you analyzing ice cream when you are tasting it?
Yes. So I use all of my senses when analyzing ice cream. So before I even put it in my mouth, I look at the appearance of it. I look at it in the container. Is it a little shrunken? Does it look like when you scoop it, does it look a little airy, or does it not have a lot of kind of fluffiness to it, meaning it's a little bit more dense? I look at it to see, like, can I see any like little graininess that might be coming through to see if maybe it's over churned. I look at various components of just its texture. Ice cream, when you it's you can't really necessarily smell. I mean, you can smell ice cream, but it doesn't really have a very like fragrant smell all the time, depending upon the flavor. And so you may get dairy notes out of it, but I don't really smell it as much. But in terms of appearance, I look at the appearance first, and then, you know, I take a scoop or a little spoonful, and I taste it. And honestly, I don't even take spoonfuls. I'll be very honest. I take little bitty components of it, little bitty taste, because all I'm doing is really tasting. But when I taste before I even really look for the taste, I'm actually looking for the texture more than anything. Texture is key. Texture is everything. So I'm trying to figure out, all right, is there any iciness to it? Because although there's ice in ice cream, you don't want to taste the ice crystals. You don't want to detect them. You want it to be smooth. So I'm looking for how smooth it is, how creamy it is. I'm looking for, is there any sandiness, meaning any grittiness to it, any graininess? Is it soggy? Is it heavy? Is it kind of a weak ice cream? Is it melting really fast in my mouth? Or is it kind of sitting there for a little bit? Is it coating my mouth with the fat, or is it kind of, I don't know, just kind of disappearing? I'm looking for all of it. I'm looking for all of it in kind of one or two bites. Then I go into to actually the taste itself and the flavor component. So the sweetness, the saltiness, the bitterness, and yes, ice cream can be bitter, especially chocolate or coffee ice cream can have those bitter components because those are naturally bitter items. How sweet is it? How the flavor release is kind of coming through. And then I start looking at those are the taste components. I actually start looking at the flavor. So if it's a vanilla ice cream, am I getting kind of a Madagascar vanilla, Indonesian vanilla, or am I getting like a vanillin, which is actually not really vanilla? It's actually a synthetic vanilla type product that's created in a lab. And wow. So kind of what are those sort of components that I'm getting? And am I getting sort of the dairy notes first that kind of come in a little bit of maybe sweet and saltiness in the middle and then kind of end in a very rounded out vanilla note? Or am I ending sweet? It sort of just depends. I prefer, when I make ice cream, I prefer to end in a very nice, cleaned, rounded vanilla with dairy components with it. But it doesn't always end that way, depending upon the flavors that are being made and depending upon how the product is being made and what flavors are being made and how much fat is in the product as well. Ice cream by legal definition has to have 10% or more milk fat. Has to have that. Wow. By legal definition in the United States. Yeah, we have a legal definition. Whoever knew, right?
Had no idea.
Has to have 10%. Right, I know. Has to have 10% or more milk fat. There's other components to the definition, but that's the most straightforward way to say it. And if you have more than that, if you have 14% milk fat, for instance, and you use the same amount of vanilla that you would use in your 10% milk fat, you won't get as much vanilla coming through because fat is a masker. Fat masks the flavor notes. So you may have to add a little bit more if you want more to come through. And so I taste for all those things when I'm tasting ice cream. And that's the beauty of what I do. I like to say that my palate is very sensitive because I do a lot of tasting. I actually taste ice cream more than I eat ice cream. I do eat ice cream for pleasure, but I taste it more than I eat it because I don't have to swallow it to know its components of when I taste it. I actually spit out a lot of product because I don't need to swallow it. ice cream has a lot of fat and sugar, let's just admit. And so I don't need to digest all of that all the time. But believe you me, I do treat myself.
I love that. Yeah, no, that completely makes sense. I feel like that is wise words, right?
yes. You have to know your limits sometimes. Yes,
exactly. Oh, that's so fascinating. I mean, there's so many like levels of analysis in what you were describing.
Yes.
It's so interesting. And I can see now that you're explaining all these things, how it's like a fine science. And I know, like, I like ice cream, but I'm not like obsessed with ice cream. And so I am really particular about the ice cream that I do have because of the fact that I'm not obsessed with it. And so I'm just like, if I'm going to have it, it better be good or it's not worth my calories.
Worth it.
Yeah. And so it is interesting to think about all the components that go into it. And then you talking about like actually the math and like the formulations behind it and the science. And it's just like the chemistry I feel like now every time I open like a carton of ice cream or I go somewhere new for ice cream, I'm just gonna like be thinking about so many things all at once.
you'll never eat or think about ice cream or look at ice cream the same.
Exactly. It's so true. So I found you have so many fun things, like just like on the things you sent me on your website and what have you. But I love this idea of, which was so cute. You said roses are red, violets are blue. Who needs flowers when ice cream will do? And so I love like just kind of that I feel like is such a great way to put it. And really like it shows how much you love what you do. For the purposes of people who are, you know, surprised me, maybe they're listening and like, oh, wow, I love this idea of like being a food scientist, or I love this idea of specifically being an ice cream scientist. And they aren't sure like what they would need to do to get into it. Do you have suggestions for them as far as like what is the best path or things to think about? Because I think this is something, I mean, like really, I feel like, okay, if someone could have told me you do chemistry and you can go do this type of job, you know, or you can be a food scientist and get to influence these types of things, like that is so cool. And there's so many times I feel like that we don't know how science and math can help us and those skills can help us get into these careers. Like we don't see the bridge between them. We don't see that connection. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of explain what you feel like are some of the pathways maybe into this type of career, and also maybe things for people to focus in on that are most helpful if they are interested?
For sure. Some of the pathways, you know, into become a food scientist are, I took a slightly different path starting with chemistry as my undergrad, but people can go straight into food science grad, undergraduate degree. Okay. There are universities, tons of universities in the US and across the globe that offer food science as an actual degree that you can major. You can get your bachelor's in food science. And there you will learn kind of a broad range. Take a food chemistry class, take a food micro, take a food engineering, take all these different classes and labs that will then give you sort of that broad spectrum of what it means to kind of do food science and become a food scientist. And then you can also then along that pathway, take courses in nutrition and dietetics. Although I don't have a background in nutrition, I do nutrition labels. And so having that background is very helpful as well. So a lot of people will go that route, or people could go my route, or I even have friends that went, they were anthropologists or are getting bachelor's in psychology and then wanted to go into the food realm. And so anyone can get into the food science area, but they would just have to, of course, have the background and knowledge, because we're not chefs. And that's a huge difference. Chefs sort of create food that you might typically kind of have immediately or kind of in that one, you know, maybe 1 to 2 days of it being made. Food scientists, a lot of what we do is making food that can go on a store shelf, or that can have a long longevity of a life on a refrigerator shelf or You know, there's packaging scientists that create the, that make sure that the packaging is proper for the shelf life that someone wants to get, or that a company wants to give a product. There's a lot of science and engineering and math that goes into that. And so if people are interested in it, going into institutions or schools that even specialize in certain foods, for instance, at UW-Madison, being it is a dairy state, we have a lot of dairy. And so I have friends that did cheese research, for instance. I chose ice cream in the lab that I was in with Professor Richard Hartzell, who's a great professor, by the way. He does a lot of phase transition and crystallization science. Mm-hmm. And so in his lab, he does a lot with ice cream, but a lot of, because we go from a liquid to a solid, or a liquid to having a gas, so it's transition of phases. But he also does a lot of candy science. And so he studies bloom in chocolate, which is when chocolate kind of looks like that little ashy kind of look to chocolate, kind of looks like a little white in color on top. That's what you call bloom. And so he studies chocolate bloom, or he studies the crystallization of sorbitol, which is the sugar alcohol that's in gum, or he's studying different things with gummy candies or hard candies or tablet candies, excuse me. And so there's so many different areas in the food industry that you can go. But what I would say is also find the school, especially for grad school. If you're looking to go to grad school for your master's or your PhD, find that school that specializes in something that you're interested in. Because for me, I was interested in ice cream. So it wouldn't make sense to go to a school that had no ice cream. So right. I went to UW-Madison because that's what they have a specialty and a professor who does, that's exactly what he does, is different research projects on in the realm of ice cream and other frozen aerated desserts. And so being able to also, you know, network and interview with people, or just meet people who are in the food science industry. There are a lot of food scientists out there, believe it or not. We're just kind of hidden. Like, people don't really know we exist. Yeah. But if you look at everything that you eat on a daily basis, whether it's like a Kind bar or a Pop-Tart or, I don't know, Cheerios, or if it's a frozen meal or anything like that, food scientists created that. And wow. So there are a lot of us out there. We just don't think of it we don't think about it. We just like, oh yeah, there's food. Thank you.
Yeah, right.
we just don't think about it. But then on the flip side, there are actually chefs who have become food scientists too, and maybe vice versa. People who kind of wanted to do sort of both sides of the field, of the food culinary field, but also the science end of it as well. So, yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of different avenues that you can go. You don't have to start off being a food scientist. You can have kind of a different path and then kind of go into food science along the way.
I love that. Yeah, because that was one of my questions. Is it something that people can kind of get into later if they never heard of it? And then they're like, whoa, this is so cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so fascinating. And I love that someone's doing research about all these different like kinds of things, like chocolates and candies. I mean, yeah, we just never have thought about that type of research at a university. So how cool.
I know.
That sounds so
Skittles did not just appear. They had to be created.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They had the same for a Cheeto. It had to be created. Like, someone had to create that. So all of the food that we have, especially what we see that's packaged, that all that food had to be created. And even what's not packaged, what you get at a restaurant, all of that had to be created. The pasta that's being made, there's a food scientist out there that's creating pasta, or creating gluten-free pasta, for instance, that can have the longer shelf life, or that can have, you know, make sure it sits in the sauce properly so it doesn't become soggy or anything like that. All of that is a food scientist that creates that. But also, the beauty of food scientists as well, we also look at creating foods that can be healthier for consumers. So you'll see a lot of products that might say 20% reduced sodium or something like that. Or maybe they don't even call it out because they don't want consumers to know, because they don't want consumers to get a little skeptical, but they might be reducing the sodium or reducing the sugar to make products healthier for people, and maybe using some replacers in there, or maybe just taking it down and people don't even really realize that it maybe changed a little bit. So all of that comes into play. We're not just out there to just create foods. We're also here to make foods better and healthier as well.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's such an interesting point too. And especially now, right? Like in the in the world that we live in, like trying to be, you know, kind of like a little bit more probably responsible about what we create and like what people are consuming. So yeah, that's fascinating. Are there, when you talk to people about sort of the projects that you're working on and like you, you know, you say like, okay, we're going to create this ice cream or these number of ice creams for someone, and this is going to be the process like from start to finish. How, I don't know if this is a question you can ask, but or answer, but I'm going to ask it anyways. It's like, how long does it usually take from like start to finish to develop a product or a line of products? And like, I'm just curious, like what that entails, kind of if you can walk us through the timeline, because I'm imagining there's actually quite a few steps involved. And I'm imagining maybe there's like back and forth a little bit. So I'm curious about that element of your job.
Yes. So creating new products definitely takes time. Okay. And every product that's created does not hit the shelves or hit the consumer's mouth, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, honestly, it's not a winner. Mm-hmm. And so you might have one product out of all the 10 that you created that's like, all right, we can go forward with this one. But the process is quite long sometimes, because you need to do your market research. You need to understand, you know, what are the new products that you want to create and who's your target market. And there's some products that are years long projects, not just 1 year, but multiple years, because of how intricate it might be, or the cost of it, or maybe there's a new product that came out during part of the research, and you now want to use this instead of that, or you know what I mean? That there's all different things that can occur. But in my experiences and in the ice cream field, I usually could go from a year long worth of a project all the way to as quickly as like 2 months.
Wow.
Now a two month project is go, pedal to the metal. And maybe we're not doing all of the steps that we would do on a longer term project. And that may be because of what their timelines are, or because they've got to meet X, Y, and Z deadline. It just sort of depends upon the companies. But then there's other companies that just move slower because they're working on, at a slower pace because they're working on a yearly calendar. And that yearly calendar, there's no reason to have to rush it. So now you've got time. Now you've got time to do all these reiterations. And I do reiterations even in that 2 month period, but there may be 6 reiterations at once instead of 6 reiterations over a month of a period of time. So it just sort of depends. And it depends upon is it going into a scoop shop? Or is it going into retail packaging? Because packaging also takes time to create. It takes time to, you know, make sure all your labeling is right and make sure it's the right font size. Because even there's rules around how large your font can be or how small your font can be on a package. I'm telling you, there's everything that you're like, what? People just don't even understand. Then there's also making sure, like, if, for instance, if you want something to be kosher, or if you want something to be halal, or if you need it to be organic, or have whatever kind of symbol on the packaging, you have to get that approved and passed. And so that also takes time. And so depending upon the project will depend upon how quickly it can go. But sometimes I nail the flavor from the beginning and it's like, yep, this is what we want. And we, you know, kind of look at it over time because you want to make sure that it still stays true to what you want it to be. And so you can do accelerated shelf life studies and things like that to make sure that the product still holds up. But you've got to do all those testing points too along the way. So you don't want to rush it too much, especially if you need the product to last long. But sometimes people just want to go to market because of whatever reasons, for whatever the company situation might be. And so depending upon what's kind of created, it might be, like I said, a 2 month process all the way over to a 12 month process. But there's sometimes, especially if you're working just like in a scoop shop, you can make a product for a scoop shop. You already have the base. The base is tried and true. That means it's kind of balanced. It is balanced. And then you just kind of throw flavors on top of it. And you're like, all right, let's test this. So So that could be done in like a week span of time. It can take no time, especially if it's just for a scoop shop and you're not really looking at doing much else with it. Okay. But if you're looking for longevity with the product, meaning it's not just in a scoop shop, but you need it to last much longer, then you've got a little bit more time on your hands. But it sort of just depends. I've worked in all scenarios. Sometimes the longer projects are a little bit more fun, a little bit less stressful. But then you really like the really fast projects because then you can see, you can get people's feedback right away. You can kind of see it come to life that much sooner. And I mean, who doesn't like to work under a little bit of pressure every now and then?
Yeah, I could see that both ways. That's yes. So interesting. So how did you, like, I guess stepping back in time a little bit, how did you end up getting all the experience that you needed to actually do like all the hands-on pieces of this? Was that part of your program when you were at the PhD program? Like, is that where you kind of got the hands-on pieces, or did you do like internships, or was it just like little by little, actually, like once you were done with your degree? I'm just so curious how that worked, because all these pieces are actually so different. And yet, like, I can see how you would really need all of them to come together very nicely. So, yeah.
Yes, yes. Great question, actually. So, because I went into graduate school with a degree in chemistry, I did not have food science at all. I didn't have a background in food science. Chemistry, all food science at its core is chemistry. We do chemistry to create the foods. Okay. Like it's a balanced equation and all of that. Or you do, you know, you have microbiome. That's part of chemistry. You have, cause you got to make sure your food is safe. It's food safety. You have food engineering within that. That's part of chemistry. You have physics involved. So all of that plays in that food science realm. I did not have the food science aspect though. So when I went into grad school, I had to take food science classes with freshmen because I didn't have food chemistry. I didn't have food engineering. So I had to take those classes. Along my tenure of being a grad student, I did internships. So my first year of graduate school, I actually interned at General Mills, and they own the international sector of Häagen-Dazs. And so the U.S. Part of it is owned by Nestle. The international, it's a joint venture. The U.S. is owned by Nestle. The international side is owned by Häagen-Dazs. So I worked for Häagen-Dazs over a summer, and I created some of the best tasting products. They were so good. I used to eat it for breakfast.
I love that.
Back when I was younger, I know. Back when I was younger, I used to chow down on ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
As you should when you're young, right?
Good calcium, yeah. As I should when I'm younger. Good calcium, good protein coming through. Good fats. So that's where I learned a lot. I learned a lot of hands-on working with the marketing department, working with the sales department, working with the production team to create these products that I was making for my project. I also had another internship at General Mills where I interned for Tostino's Pizza Rolls. So you've got two different sides of the spectrum. You've got a really high-end product like Häagen-Dazs. Then you have Tostino's Pizza Rolls, which are, you know, a lot less expensive to make than your Häagen-Dazs ice cream. And so I wanted to learn a lot about cost-cutting measures and things like that to, you know, maybe sodium reducing and things like that when I work for, depending upon kind of who I was working for at that time. And then my third summer of graduate school, I actually went to Paris to do a internship over there, working with some colleagues who were doing an ice cream experiment in Paris. And so I spent a summer in Paris doing hands-on experience there as well. And then when I graduated from graduate school, I actually learned a ton working for Cold Stone Creamery. That was my first job out of graduate school. But in grad school, I used to teach. And let me back up. While I was in graduate school, I used to have my total was about 17 undergrads during my whole time in graduate school. And I used to run a consulting consulting type opportunity for companies to be able to come to the university and to get projects made or to get to learn more about the ice cream industry. And so I would run that sort of consulting umbrella And that's actually where I learned a lot because I was very hands-on with companies. I was trying to help them create all different kinds of projects. And so I was using my knowledge and my skill set that I had learned along the way up until that point and be able to, you know, kind of feed into those projects. And then I would also teach undergrads that were coming in that were helping me with some of those projects. I would teach them about ice cream. I would teach new grad students that were coming in. So I had a lot of teaching experience along the way that allowed me to kind of pull all different sides of it together. And then when I graduated, I ended up working at Cold Stone Creamery. I was able to learn a lot on the international side because I worked on the international business for them. So I would travel the world and go to different places on behalf of Cold Stone to create ice cream in different parts of the world for their franchisees. And so I would help create ice cream mixes in all different parts of the world, but I needed it to resemble and taste as close as it could to what was being made in America. And so I learned a lot on the international side of the business through that experience. But all the experiences that I've had bring everything together, basically, to create sort of this knowledge that I have in the industry, but also that I can then help pass on to others as well. And so I would say it's a lot of what I learned in the classroom, but a lot of what I learned outside the classroom has been able to teach me and give me the confidence as well to be able to do what I do.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for explaining all that, because it is really fascinating to kind of see the steps that you took and kind of like how you as you go through each experience, like building on to your knowledge and what you've learned, and like the kind of the lessons that occur in the outside the school environment versus inside. Yeah, as well.
Yes, both are important. I tell people all the time, although college might cost, what I learned in and outside of the classroom, I can say both are priceless. Yeah. And so I don't take my schooling for granted, and it's given me also the confidence to be able to do what I can do or do what I do, and knowing that becoming an ice cream scientist is not too far-fetched. Even though I never knew of an ice cream scientist when I said I wanted to become one, I realize it's not too crazy. It's not too far-fetched. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. And on that note, like, I'm curious, is there an association of like ice cream scientists or like food scientists, and do you all like go to these conferences and, you know, do high tens for each other? Like, I'm so cool. Like, you're so cool.
Yes. There is the Institute of Food Technologists that brings the food industry as well as food scientists together yearly for quite a big food show and conference. I believe this year it might be in Chicago again. They usually split between Chicago, New Orleans, and Las Vegas. But it's Institute of Food Technologists. So food technologists, food scientists, food engineers, food chemists, kind of from all over the world, all over the different industries come together. Lots of food talk, to say the least. And then for ice cream, there is no, like, as far as I know, maybe I don't know. And if someone knows, let me know. But I don't believe that there's like an ice cream technologists like group. Okay. There's not a lot of us. Okay. But there are different companies and institutions that put on different ice cream things. So there's ice cream technology conferences that exist. For instance, UW-Madison does one. There used to be one out in Cologne, Germany. I don't think they do that one anymore, though. And then there's also sort of ice cream courses that people can take in the ice cream industry through like Penn State or UW-Madison that offer ice cream courses for people wanting to get into the ice cream industry, but they're like short courses. They're brief. Then there's also the sort of like, I guess like school of thought where you can, you know, sort of kind of like learn ice cream through like Gelato University, like through Carpegiani does Gelato University. They do it out in Italy, but I think they also do it in North Carolina. So there's all these like different ways in which people can sort of learn a little bit about ice cream. But it depends upon like what kind of level you want to get into and how deep you want to go and kind of what's your end goal. Do you want to just, you know, have your own ice cream company, or do you want to get into like the nitty gritty science? Most people don't want to really get into the nitty gritty science. But then there's also an ice cream retailers association. So it's all the people that do retail ice cream, like scoop shops, they have their own association as well. So it's all different kinds of things that are out there.
I love that. Well, that was a great overview, because I always ask about like resources or ideas that people, if they're interested, can kind of start looking into things and learning. So those were some great ideas for people to get started, no matter where their level of interest is. So very cool. And for you, like, kind of as we wrap up, do you have anything that I didn't ask that you want to say about ice cream? Because or like your job as far as an ice cream scientist that either maybe people don't really know about, they don't know to ask about, but that you would really want to share.
Yeah, totally. So most people, whenever I tell people I'm an ice cream scientist, they think that all I do is make flavors.
Okay.
And that's far from what I do. So it's a bit of a misconception that people think all I do is make flavors and eat ice cream all day. But at its core of what I do, especially as an ice cream scientist, is I'm creating that balanced equation that I talked about earlier, creating that base so that the flavors have a beautiful product to flavor. Mm. And so it's sort of a misconception. And then, of course, as I said earlier, I taste more than I eat. I don't just sit around and eat ice cream all day. Although that is a perk of the job, is that you can eat a lot of ice cream. But I would also, you know, encourage people to, although it may not be ice cream that they sort of do for the rest of their lives is to find what it is that makes their eyes light up the way ice cream does for me. So find their ice cream. And, you know, I hope that people can love what they do as much as I love what I do.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And that is good to like share that you're not just eating ice cream all day, because
no,
I was wondering how that part worked, but also
not all day.
I think the idea of like creating the base through through the formulation, and that is like a really interesting concept, because I'm imagining that there's like, as you mentioned, there's just like so many different ways to create the base depending on what people are looking for and how long it's supposed to last on a shelf, or
and cost and how expensive are they willing to allow the product to be, or do you want it to be a little less expensive so we have to use different types of ingredients? There's all different things that you have to look at as a food scientist, not even just an ice cream scientist, but as a food scientist in general. Because a lot of people, we see this across the industries, not even just the food industry, but in general, it's all about cutting costs. People have to be able to figure out a way to make things more affordable. And sometimes that's cutting costs in different areas, or switching out ingredients that maybe cost a little bit less and also might be more nutritious for you. So it's all different types of things that people do, or that we look at as food scientists. So yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. Before we're done, so I have to ask a question from my son, who's 5, and his name's Daniel. So he asks, when you eat ice cream, do you put toppings on it?
Ooh, Daniel, good question. Yes. So when I eat ice cream, I love ice cream that has what we call inclusions. Okay. And inclusions can be what we call a variegate, which is like your swirl or your ripple of fudge or your swirl of caramel or your strawberry ribbon that's kind of swirled throughout your ice cream. We call those variegates. And then there's also things like cookie pieces or sprinkles or nuts or cookie dough. Anything like that, that's a harder piece, we call those particulates. And so I like to say I'm quite particular about my particulates, but yes, I do love ice cream that has inclusions or toppings or what we could call mix-ins. I love, love, love texture in ice cream. And so I appreciate having those inclusions. And my favorite, Daniel, one of my favorite inclusions to eat in ice cream is actually an Oreo cookie. I love a soggy Oreo. So basically, when you put an Oreo in ice cream, you have what you call a moisture migration, because Oreo cookies, those cookies are not going to be coated in chocolate. They're chocolate, but they're not coated in chocolate. They don't have that barrier to keep the moisture out. And so the moisture from the ice cream seeps into the cookie. And I love the taste of a soggy Oreo. Oh my gosh, I love cookies and cream ice cream.
That's so funny. So do I. It's one of my favorites when I eat it. Yes, yeah.
You love a soggy Oreo.
Exactly. That's so funny. I never thought of it that way though.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Okay. Well, thank you for answering his question. I so appreciate that. So just to wrap up, I'm going to ask you my last question. And it is this: to end our conversation, will you share a sentence that uses verbiage or jargon from your field? Then please translate it so it's understandable to us.
Yes. So a phrase or a sentence in my field is the fat will partially coalesce. And that partial coalescence is what we attribute to creaminess in ice cream. And what partial coalescence is and how it happens is the agglomeration of fat globules or the coming together of fat globules during the churning process. And so ice cream has milk fat, 10% or more. And those milk fat globules are little bitty globules that are kind of just floating around the ice cream mix. And during the churning process or the freezing process, you have a blade inside of your freezer, or what we call a dasher, that spins. And then as you start to freeze, that the water turns into ice. The sheer forces that are the friction that the dasher as well as the ice crystals create up against the fat globules cause those fat globules to want to sort of beat against each other and then start fusing together. But because those fat globules are partially crystalline in the inside, meaning that they have fat crystals on the inside, they can't come together fully. So they come together partially in what we call partial coalescence. And the agglomeration or partially coalesced fat globules is what we attribute to the creaminess in ice cream. So whenever you're eating an ice cream, you're like, oh, this is so creamy. It's probably attributed to the partially coalesced fat or the agglomeration of fat globules. And to sort of make it kind of all make sense, when we look at butter is a huge fat globule that's come together because it's liquid fat on the inside, and it's when it's being churned. In ice cream, because of the temperature at which ice cream is being frozen, you end up with a partially crystalline fat globule. The fat inside the globule starts to crystallize, and that hinders from the globules that are beating together to be able to fully come together and make a larger globule. So they make small little globules that all kind of come together and lay on top of each other, or sort of like a cluster of grapes that are partially fused. The grapes are partially fused together, and that's what we attribute to the creaminess in ice cream.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have a whole other view when I start having
a whole other view.
That's so great.
I love it.
Thank you for that. That was a great explanation and example of your sentence. So Maya, it was such a pleasure. If people want to learn about more about what you do, if they want to connect and find you, how can they do that?
Yes, thank you. Well, thank you, Julie, for having me. And if you want to learn more about what I do, you can follow me on Instagram at maya.warren. That's maya.warren. You can also find me via my website at drmayawarren.com. And yeah, I love talking about ice cream. Would love to share my knowledge and my passion with the world. So thank you for having me today.
Of course, you have a very cool job.
Thank you. Cool and sweet, I would say.
Exactly, for sure. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Women with Cool Jobs. I'll be releasing a new episode every 2 weeks, so make sure you hit that subscribe button. And if you loved the show, please give me a 5-star rating. Also, it would mean so much if you share this episode with someone you think would love it or would find it inspirational. And lastly, do you have ideas for future shows, or do you know any rockstar women with cool jobs? I would love to hear from you. You can email me at julie@womenwithcooljobs.com, or you can find me on Instagram at womencooljobs. Again, that's womencooljobs. Thank you so much for listening, and have an incredible day.